Welcome to Open Spaces. From Wyoming Public Radio News, I'm Camila Kdalska. We hear the first of many stories that we've compiled from last summer when the nonprofit StoryCorps hosted an oral history project in Cheyenne with veterans. We'll hear a mom and daughter remembering their family member, Scott, who was a veteran.
When we would want to go on these roller coasters, he would love them, but he wouldn't fit in them very well, so these would be sticking up. It was hilarious, except now I'm tall too, and I feel exactly what he was feeling.
And we switch gears to an award-winning podcast that discusses hard, intimate topics. It recently featured Wyoming Speaker of the House and his wife, Albert and Sue Somers. The host speaks to us about why she wanted to talk to them.
Who are these two, and how did they find each other, and what is this marriage like? And so it started with that question.
Those stories and more coming up on Open Spaces from Wyoming Public Radio News.
My mother was beautiful, and she had a radiant smile her entire life. She loved adventure. She loved her duty. She was a woman of commitment, and I attribute that all to the nursing in the Navy. My mother referred to me as her daughter, her best friend, and her housemate in recent years. One of the gifts of the pandemic, being isolated due to her age, was that she wrote, she talked, we talked a lot. And then when she became ill, I cared for her at home.
This Wyoming veteran story was made possible by StoryCorps and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
This is Jennifer Hickson of The Moth. Moth shows feature eyewitness accounts of the most important or hilarious or moving stories in a person's life. We don't allow any sort of script on stage, so the stories have the excitement of a sporting event, but the intimacy of a tete-a-tete. The Moth is simple and satisfying, like a home-cooked meal for the ears. That's The Moth Radio Hour from the Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org.
Sunday afternoons at 2 on Wyoming Public Radio.
Welcome to Open Spaces. From Wyoming Public Radio News, I'm Camila Kdalska. Last summer, the nonprofit StoryCorps hosted an oral history project here in Wyoming. Veterans and their families recorded honest and personal stories about their military experiences. We're grateful to begin sharing those conversations with our listeners now. In our first story, mother and daughter Sarah and Lily share their memories of Lily's father, Scott Flack, who passed away in 2019. The two share stories of Scott as a beloved father and community member. They open up about navigating life through grief and discuss why Wyoming's veterans deserve better mental health care. The conversation is facilitated by StoryCorps' Morgan Ziffmeister. You'll hear Morgan asking questions throughout.
My name is Sarah Compton, and I am 49 years old.
I'm Lily Flack. I'm 17.
One thing that we sometimes do is we will ask people to, you know, paint a picture with words. You know, so can you paint a portrait of Scott with words?
Scott was 6'7", so he was very tall, very skinny. Eventually, he just shaved his head because he was going bald.
He was a big dude. He was a gentle giant. When we would want to go on these roller coasters, he would love them, but he wouldn't fit in them very well, so his knees would be sticking up. It was hilarious, except now I'm tall too, and I feel exactly what he was feeling.
He was a volleyball player. He was a lefty, and he was very, very good. As a matter of fact, probably in the volleyball community, especially here in Northern Colorado, you could talk about Scott and people would know him.
My dad and I, we've always been really close. I was his first kid. So there was that. And then also with volleyball and everything, I was just kind of always with him or always wanting to be with him. We made a club together that is still going on. They're on their fifth year now in Cheyenne. So they participate in some tournaments and it's grown from one team to I think they have 7 or 8 teams now. When he was my coach, I just remember we would be driving down to Denver, Fort Collins, and we'd be listening to like Broadway show tunes in the car. And that was just always every single time, drive there and back, no matter what, it was always there was music and we would goof around.
I actually met him when he was serving in Wichita, Kansas. He was separating from active duty Air Force to go play as a very old 30-plus-ish freshman for a new men's volleyball team. When he separated, he was not done with his service. So he moved from an active duty Air Force member to a reservist. We eventually started dating and everything just was, it was just really wonderful. We got married in Vegas because he was a reservist. They told him he was going to get sent overseas. Okay. So he was stationed in Saudi Arabia the first round. He came home. We found out we were going to have a baby. And so that had to be in 2004. So found out I was going to have a baby, and he got called up again.
Wow. And what went through your head at that moment?
It was unbelievable. Like, I couldn't believe that. Like, it didn't make any sense. I was so new at being a military spouse. Like, I didn't know that that could happen, that you could be called twice. And by then we were well into what was happening overseas. Anyway, he had to go then to Iraq that time. And he was going, I don't know if you remember hearing about the Green Highway.
No, go ahead and tell
so me that's
a
like
about that.
The most, like the deadliest highway that you could be on. He was going on that green highway daily in a not safe vehicle. As he went there, they were going into the hospital, and he was seeing children that were harmed or dying because of the war. So he and then remember at the same time, I'm at home pregnant
right.
with his first baby. So I think that emotionally, no, I don't think. I know that emotionally it was much more than he could handle. I had our little baby girl. Because of the situation, they let him leave early. So he came home before Christmas and got to stay home.
How did things progress after that?
Not very well. Again, hindsight 2020. I think he had some pretty severe PTSD from that. And I wish somebody would have told me what to expect. And I wish somebody would have been asking me, what's going on in your house? Like, how are things? Like, I wish someone was checking in on me. I was mad at him. I was mad at military. And so I just said, you guys did this. You like let this young person or this man go and deploy him twice with no support. He separated from the military at that time
okay.
with disability. So that was good. But eventually we did get divorced. But with the exception of the first 6 months, we stayed very, very close. We stayed so close, and I am close with his, widow. I'm close with her now. We right. really worked, all of us, all three of us adults worked very hard to make sure that everything was good.
Was he during these times, like, sort of recognizing, you know, where his own mental health was?
I just think, and this is just my professional opinion. I think it's very hard when people have severe mental health issues for them to be able to realize and engage in what they have to do. Like, I think he realized it, but he just like, for whatever reason, just did not continuously take care of himself.
Mental health, especially in Wyoming, isn't taken as seriously as it definitely should be. I respect the military. I respect what they do. I respect for what they do and keeping us safe. But at the same time, when my dad went to get help, he was told there was a 3-month wait, so he wasn't able to get the help he needed.
What was it like for you when he passed away?
It was hard. I didn't really process it very well. And it kind of made it worse in the long run to just avoid that it happened. It's upsetting, but you also, like, at least in my experience, you're kind of mad. Like, you're mad that that happened.
When he, when he died by suicide, the only way that I could explain it to them, and funny, this seems helpful to a lot of people, is that, okay, imagine a balloon on top of your head. Now fill it up with how much Dad loves you, and how much Dad loves Kim, and how much he loves your brother, and how much he loves volleyball, and keep filling that up of all the love your dad has. And imagine that this is bigger than that, and he couldn't, that love couldn't, like that love couldn't win.
I have people who have like recently also lost their dad, and they come to me and I don't know how to explain it because they're like, it's not getting better. I was like, I mean, it does. It takes a really like long time though. I had a therapist kind of explain it to me like this, and it really kind of clicked in my mind. So like when something happens, like you're like a ball in a box, right? And there's this big old button. And it's a really small box. And every time the ball, which is you, hits the button, you get upset, you get sad. But as time goes on, the box grows, but there's still the button in there. So it's still going to hit it. You're still going to feel it sometimes. It just happens less often.
If there was anything, you know, that you wanted to say to him, you know, if you could say something to him, what would you say?
So he's buried here in town, and I like to go visit him.
Mm-hmm.
Like during CFD, his birthday, any of those, I'll go and sit over there and I kind of just talk like I would be having a conversation.
Yeah.
I think it's helpful because it's not good to bottle everything up, and it's an easy release to just kind of go sit there. If you're upset, if you're angry, any of it, like you can just go like be there and just be like, wow, like I really don't like you right now, or I really miss you, any of those. So I don't think I have anything I would want to say to him right now. I usually say my piece to him anyways.
If you or someone you know is experiencing a mental health crisis, call 988 and press 1 for veterans or active service members. That interview was produced by Noah Greenspan. Tune in every month on Open Spaces to hear a new story from our Veteran StoryCorps series. Up next, we go to Lander, where a new community-focused center wants to be the place to go for veterans. This is Open Spaces.
Here's an invitation for you to join the party here at the Retro Cocktail Hour, where the swinging sounds of the Space Age Bachelor Pad come alive. Every week we serve up classic tiki tunes, private eye jazz, groovy bossa nova, and other incredibly strange music. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join us for a hi-fi highball, the Retro Cocktail Hour. Saturday night at 6 on Wyoming Public Radio.
My name is Ron Laporto. I'm 71 years old. It's been a long journey for me. I enlisted, like I said, in the spring of 1971. And even though I've technically been retired since October 2010, you never really retire. I would just encourage everybody to take care of veterans and take care of people that are on watch now.
This Wyoming Veteran Story was made possible by StoryCorps and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Welcome back to Open Spaces. A new center for veterans officially opened its doors in Lander last month. The center is focused on creating a welcoming space for veterans and first responders to process, connect, and access resources. Wyoming Public Radio's Hannah Haberman reports on how the space wants to become a go-to place for this community.
Do you?
Yeah, they're in boxes already.
Oh, sit. A tall, tiger-striped shepherd named Tigger greets visitors as they walk through the door of the Lander Community Veterans Resource Center.
Come here. You know me. See, you know me. Don't you? Yes, you do. Come here.
Tigger is Michael Tanner's new service dog. Well, service dog in training. Tanner's an Air Force vet who's the executive director of the new organization. He's also the chaplain for the local American Legion chapter.
As a chaplain, I'm obligated by my oath to do everything I can to help those in need. As a military veteran, I took an oath to protect and defend.
Tanner says Lander is home to more than 870 registered military vets, more than 10% of the town's population.
I got tired of burying veterans that we should not have been burying. And it's because they were not getting the services they needed.
The center is hosting its first ever coffee house event, a 2-hour open house to give veterans and their families a chance to learn more about the new space and connect with each other. Michael is joined by his wife, Lori, the center's organizer, in the sun-filled front room. They've made it inviting, with comfortable couches and the smell of coffee brewing.
We set the stage, and now we need the players upon it. We need the veterans to come, and because like Michael said, this will be what the veterans want it to be.
Her and Michael live across the street from the center, which is on a quiet corner of a residential neighborhood. She says the location was right under their noses.
We're standing outside, and Michael's like, wait a minute, because we're racking our brain thinking, where are we going to do this? You know, there's empty buildings along Main Street, but way too expensive.
They received a grant from the Lohr Foundation to pay for the first year of rent for the space. The Tanners wanted to make sure the new center was nowhere near a bar, and that the location could provide some privacy that might help veterans feel more comfortable coming in.
People are cautious anyway. But veterans are especially cautious.
Like Tom Roberts. He's a Marine Corps vet who's been going to the center over the last month. But he wouldn't have come in the first time without his wife.
She came the first couple times. And then she asked me, was I good? And I said, yeah. And she goes, now you got a place of your own.
Roberts deals with PTSD, depression, and anxiety, and has a bad back. He says he's had difficulty building trust with counselors, but that coming to the center has been different.
But these guys, the trust, it was almost instant. I felt something, and I'm glad I did. These folks are good.
So far, the center has started a Veterans Talking to Veterans group that meets every Thursday. They're also working to get another group called Moral Injury up and running. Robert says because he feels trust in this place, he's taking advantage of these services.
This place is really needed. So many veterans in the whole county need some place like this. Not just veterans, but first responders, too.
Yeah.
You know, all these people.
And for Wade LeBeau, that's really the point of the center. LeBeau is on the board of directors and served in the Navy. He says so many vets struggle to transition back to life after service and have a hard time finding purpose or meaning.
We were all reprogrammed to do a job, to be a machine, and then when you get out, you realize you're no longer a machine. But who are you?
LeBeau is Eastern Shoshone and is a coach for the center's Veterans Talking to Veterans group. He says that Native vets face a unique set of challenges when they come home and have to grapple with hard questions.
Because of the past that has happened with the Natives and with colonization, with, you know, the massacres that have happened, the fighting that has happened, you know, I've been asked why I would serve a country that killed us.
LeBeau says that being a veteran creates a deep bond with other veterans, and that bond can be crucial in moving forward and healing.
And we're so great at defending each other, but these groups now, we got to become great at helping each other heal from what has happened.
And Tom Roberts wants to help. He's planning to volunteer to run the coffee house, which will be open for 2 hours every day during the week. He says the dedication of the Tanners has already been a huge comfort.
They know no matter what the weather is, because of their location and where they live, I know they're going to be here and I'll get here. And if whoever's instructing it can't get here, it'll still be open for us to be in here and talk. I just know that.
That's exactly the type of community the Tanners want to create. And they aren't stopping anytime soon. They're currently working on building desks for a computer lab at the center so that veterans can access telehealth services and take online college courses. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Hannah Haberman. The 40th Annual Governors Forum will take place in Laramie next week. It will bring business owners from all over Wyoming together to discuss and share ideas through a series of panels. Many people helped organize the event, including Chris Mickey. Wyoming Public Radio's Taylor Saunders got a preview of the event from him.
What is the purpose of the forum, and why do we do this?
Sure. Yeah, the Governor's Business Forum is really Wyoming's premier business event. So it's more like a conference of like-minded individuals from the business community in Wyoming. And it's a chance for everybody to get together and discuss issues that are affecting businesses all over the state. And it's a great chance for business leaders across the state to be able to get together, network, see each other. A lot of times this is the one time of year that, you know, old friends are able to get together and see each other and talk about how their businesses and work is going. And this is the 40th anniversary of it. So this has been going on in Wyoming for 40 years, which is longer than I've been alive. And it's pretty amazing that any event can go on that long, but it just shows how much people enjoy it and the need for it every year. So we're happy to be once again holding it in Laramie. This is the second year that we've had it at the University of Wyoming. And they've been great partners, and we're excited to get it going.
Perfect. Okay, so you did mention already the 40th year anniversary. Is there anything special happening because it's the 40th year, or just normal?
Well, we really think that it's a special event every year. And so we try to do our best every year to make sure that we bring in world-class speakers and really try to make it worthwhile for everyone to attend. So while we don't have anything special or specific happening this year that's different from other years, we do have some fun things, like we have old photos from archives of folks that were, you know, participating in the Governor's Business Forum back in the 80s and 90s. So we have some slideshows and posters and things like that that we'll have around the venue, which are really fun to look at. There's some legislators and folks in the Wyoming government that I've seen pictures of from 20 or 30 years ago, and it's pretty amazing just to see some of those old faces from a time where, you know, we were still talking about some of the same issues. And it's just really cool to see an event that, you know, has such a long, great track record like this one.
Yeah, are there any, like, big pictures of the forum? Like, what do you think is, like, the main purpose, you would say?
Sure. So as part of the business forum, we have what we call the day events. So that's your panels. We have some great opening panels and some keynote speakers that we're really looking forward to. And then every other year, we hold what's called the Wyoming Business Hall of Fame Banquet, and that'll take place on a Tuesday evening. And that's a chance for us to honor and induct a couple of individuals into the Wyoming Business Hall of Fame. That has been going on since 2013, and we induct folks every other year. And then on the off years, we have what's called the Bill Daniels Ethical Leadership Award. And so that takes place on the even numbered years. And then on the odd number years, we do the Wyoming Business Hall of Fame. So we'll have a big dinner and ceremony for that as well. And then, of course, we just have a lot of wonderful panels taking place on Tuesday and Wednesday. And then on Monday, this is something that we started doing 2 or 3 years ago, where we have what's called the pre-forum seminar, which we have started focusing on mental health and wellness, especially in people's workplaces. So this is something that the Wyoming Business Alliance membership is starting to take really seriously. Mental health and wellness in Wyoming is obviously a really big issue, since, you know, we're the number one state in the country in the suicide rate. So, you know, business leaders in Wyoming know that if you don't have employees who are mentally well, you can't have an efficient workplace and you can't get the job done on time and on incorrectly.
So what panels are you looking forward to the most?
Yeah, we have a couple that we do every year. So one of them is our legislative preview panel. And that's a really cool one because we have some of the state's prominent legislators on that panel. And every year they kind of look forward to this next legislative session and give a little bit of their kind of what they think might happen as the session is upcoming. And it's always interesting to hear those and then see what happens when the legislative session actually occurs. And then this year, there's one that we've never done before, and it's called the Economic Forecast Panel. And this is the first year that the University of Wyoming has released a statewide economic forecast. And I think every other state in the country does this, but this is the first time Wyoming has done it. And so we'll be releasing that forecast and then having a panel to talk about it. And so that one, I think, will be really interesting. I don't know what that will look like at this point. The folks who did the study at the University of Wyoming knows what that looks like, but very few people know. So that'll be a really fun, interesting thing to kind of go over, I guess, unless the Wyoming's economic outlook is very bleak, and then I guess it won't be as fun, but it'll still be interesting.
Cool. Okay, so I also read online that there are going to be some important people there, Mark Gordon and then President Ed Seidel.
Absolutely, yes. So this is the Business Forum is usually a partnership between the governor's office, the Wyoming Business Alliance, and the University of Wyoming. So, you know, the governor does an amazing job every year, and he likes to join us every year. So he'll be there to kind of kick things off on Tuesday. And then First Lady Jenny Gordon will also be presenting on her Wyoming Hunger Initiative at the lunch that day.
So is that normal state to state, or is that exclusively like a Wyoming thing?
I'm not sure how many other states do it, but I can tell you that in Wyoming, you know, our leaders are really special people, and they work really hard to get close to the things that are important to them. And so we've had a great relationship with Governor Gordon. He comes every year, and he and his staff are always big supporters and are very intimately involved with the planning process as we plan for this event. So we can't thank him and his staff enough for being part of it. And, you know, I would hope that other states do it, but I can just tell you that Wyoming is a special place that, you know, we have such amazing elected officials in the state, and that includes him and all of his agency directors and on down. Have all been wonderful help.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Chris.
Thank you, Taylor.
Up next, we talked to the host of a podcast that interviewed the Wyoming Speaker of the House and his wife about death and money. This is Open Spaces.
From Wyoming Public Media and PRX, this is The Modern West, exploring the evolving identity of the American West. I'm Melody Edwards. Imagine, it's just after the holidays, you're driving your family back home cross country after a week of celebrating at your parents' house on Colorado's Front Range, when a disturbing text comes in. Next thing you know, you're watching a video of wildfire smoke blowing towards your childhood home. On December 30th, 2021, this is exactly what happens to a fellow podcast producer, my friend Ariel Lavery. And though she understands the danger of what she sees in that moment, she doesn't understand how this will cause massive upheaval for her family's way of life.
This is our house that we lived in for 33 years that burned to the ground in the Marshall Fire.
Ariel's childhood home becomes a giant pit of burned memories. Over the course of 5 episodes, we're going to follow Ariel's family from her parents' frightening evacuation all the way through their hard decisions about whether to rebuild. And we see through their eyes just how painful it is to face so much loss.
Yep, everything. The fire was so hot that all this stuff just crumbled and exploded.
As I'm seeing all this stuff, I'm just like imagining the house disintegrate underneath it and like imagining the fireplace falling down in there.
For Ariel, the Marshall Fire exposes her family's vulnerability. Living across the country, Ariel now acutely feels the hundreds of miles between her and her parents. Now, Ariel's 70-year-old mother is taking on a new life journey as a wildfire victim.
It really is like a throwdown from the universe.
It's continuously the hottest year on record for us. I had that feeling before I ever had an awareness of the climate doom that would define our lives.
But something new will grow from the burn scar that was left behind. Ariel's family will gain new understanding about the dangers of living in a disaster-prone landscape.
Fire doesn't only just happen in the mountains, it can spread on the plains and through the grasses as well.
The family will come to realize there are forces at work that leave them with fewer choices about how they want to move forward.
for a while, I was thinking, oh, we'll just live on this money for a long time. But you really can't do that. The insurance companies are not your friends. They will never give you the best deal.
As Ariel watches her parents rebuild their life, she also witnesses her mom grow.
You know, it's a painful process, but I think it's been very transformative, and it's kind of changed my outlook. What I think about now is we've got to make things better for our grandkids.
One family, one fire, and the hard choices people are making in the wake of increasing natural disasters. Be sure not to miss the Modern West's upcoming season, The Burn Scar. Coming to you every other week, starting November 15th.
Welcome back to Open Spaces from Wyoming Public Radio News. I'm Camila Kadalska. Wyoming's Speaker of the House is Albert Sommers from Sublette County. Most of us know him as a politician and as a rancher. But who is Albert otherwise? And what about his wife, the artist Sue Sommers? Well, in an award-winning podcast, wanted to dig in. We'll get to hear an excerpt of that episode later in the show. But first, Wyoming Public Radio's Caitlin Tan speaks with the show's host, Anna Sale.
Anna, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So for those who aren't familiar, maybe just give us an overview of your podcast, Death, Sex, and Money.
Yeah, it's a show that we've been making since 2014. It's an interview show with a, you know, a bold name. But the thing we say the show is about the things we think about a lot and need to talk about more. And the real intention behind the show is to do interviews with people who are well-known and famous, people who are not well-known at all, and also with our listeners that we hear from about the stuff that we all kind of go through and have to figure out, but at the same time can feel quite isolated around. And so when you have a show that's about relationships, life and death, and how we, you know, support our families and make money, you really can make episodes about just about anything. So that's what I really like about it creatively.
And you interview all sorts of people from around the world. I mean, celebrities and everyday people. I'm curious, how did Albert Sommers in Pinedale, Wyoming get on your radar?
And also Sue Sommers, the two of them together. Well, I have this strange life where I get to spend a lot of time in Wyoming, in Cody, Wyoming myself, even though I don't live there full time. And that's because I'm married to a wildlife ecologist named Arthur Middleton. And he, from before we met, has done research around the GYE. And so through him, I've gotten to know Wyoming in a really deep way, in particular, Northwest Wyoming and Cody. But also, you know, when you hang around Wyoming long enough, you start to sort of realize that everyone's about 1 or 2 degrees of separation apart. And so for a number of years, I'd heard about Albert from Arthur as this multi-generational rancher who lived near Pinedale, and also that he was a legislator, and also that he was very interested in conservation and migration corridors. And I was like, who is this guy? And then separately, I have a friend named Carol Bell who lives in Cody, and she lived for a time in Denver when she was going to grad school. And she was telling me about hanging out with this woman named Sue Sommers, who comes down from Pinedale to go to galleries in Denver because she's an artist. And then I realized that Sue and Albert were married to each other. And I was just like, what? Who are these two? And how did they find each other? And what is this marriage like? And so it started with that question.
So was there any hesitation for Albert and Sue? I mean, you mentioned the podcast has a bold name and it offers up a lot of intimate, intimate interview style. And I don't know if either of them have ever shared such kind of private, intimate details about their life so publicly.
You know, I was very aware that it was kind of a big ask. Like, do you want to tell your personal story on a show that kind of goes out on the internet? And I had heard that Sue was aware of the show and had listened to the show. So I emailed her first and I asked her, and she was sort of interested immediately. And we had a conversation about it. And she did say, you know, Albert might need a little bit more convincing. and so I reached out to Albert separately, and he did not know about the show. And, you know, just wanted to know sort of what I wanted to talk to him about. We talked about he and Sue, and we also talked about the conservation easement choices that he and his family had made about their ranch and the land. And after we had a talk, you know, he was like, okay, I'll talk to you about this stuff. And then I said, Albert, I want to make sure, do you know the name of my show? This is what it's called. And the reason it's called this is the things we think about a lot, need to talk about more, et cetera. And he sort of said kind of a funny way. He was like, well, I'm not going to talk to you about that second part, which meant sex.
Right.
He would talk to me about death and money. And I was like, that's fine. Deal.
That'll work.
Yeah.
What about the lead up to the interview for you? You mentioned you live in Cody some of the time. I'm assuming you drove down to Pinedale. Did being here in Pinedale kind of shape the interview for you a little? And what was it like driving up to their ranch?
Oh, it was like really, I mean, people who live in Pinedale probably don't want to hear me say this, but when I was in Pinedale and looking around and, like, you know, getting coffee at a coffee shop, and I was like, this place rules. I might need to spend more time here, which is probably how a lot of people feel when they come through Pinedale. So it's wonderful, but it's also wonderful because it's not overrun and crowded. I was really taken with the place and the landscape, and driving out the road to the Summers Ranch, like, it's just magnificent, you know, just what you see when you look around. And so I immediately, really helped me kind of get my head into, like, what it must mean to grow up on that kind of land, to be told that it's your responsibility to take care of that land, and everything that depends on it. So it helped me kind of understand in an even deeper way the stakes of the choices that they had to make about the future of the ranch.
Yeah. And when I think about that, you have people listening from all over the world. You know, I'm assuming that's a flavor of interview that they maybe haven't heard before, or maybe haven't heard of Pinedale before. And it's just kind of cool thinking that Albert Summers and Sue Summers are in the ears of an audience worldwide right now.
Yeah. And I really like what they're great spokespeople. There's a little bit of tape at the very beginning of the episode that really somehow made sense to me about what it can feel like when you feel a part of a community like Pinedale. It's something I have felt in Cody. Sue was describing when she first showed up, having moved around a lot all throughout growing up and as a young person, and landing in Pinedale kind of by mistake, and then realizing that she was in a place where if people were gathering and she said she was going to bring brownies and she brought the brownies, like, she'd done an important thing. Like, she describes it as the first place where she ever felt relevant. And I thought it was really beautiful and important because it's not just about Wyoming. It's not just about small towns in Wyoming. They were really describing this ethic of when you live in a community that's on a small enough scale that you are constantly aware of your interdependence. And that is something that people who I think don't live in rural communities don't know how to do, and don't know necessarily the depth of that value, what it feels like when you feel a part of that. And so that was another thing I wanted to share with people who live in really different parts of the world.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious maybe what other takeaways you had, or what might've left the biggest impression on you, throughout the interview. The second half, you guys talk a lot about them deciding not to have kids and what that means for passing the ranch down. But we also, in the first half, which we as a Wyoming Public Radio audience will hear shortly, we hear about how Sue and Albert met. And it's a really beautiful story that even brings Albert to tears a couple times. And me growing up in Pinedale, I've known Albert as a rancher, as a politician, a friendly face in the community. And I've never thought about his love story. So I'm curious, that's what stood out for me. How about for you?
I mean, I did not know until we were sitting down talking that their courtship was basically over a series of public meetings that the Bureau of Land Management was holding about energy development in Sublette County. And I thought, how perfect, you know?
Yeah.
Because nothing makes you think about, you know, gets you talking about like what your values are and thinking about what's important to you more than a public meeting, right? And so that they were sitting and having this extended conversation over the course of those public meetings, I just loved learning that. And so I didn't know that. I guess the thing that I really took away from the way they describe getting together is like, it was interesting to me that both of them kind of independent of meeting each other, I sort of reached a point in their life where they were like clear what was important to them and what they would value mm-hmm. in a longer relationship. Like Albert talks about kind of having a moment when he was 38 and realizing he didn't want to, if he could help it, he didn't want to be a rancher who just worked his whole life and died alone. Just kind of striking tape. And I felt that also with how they talked about their decisions about managing the land. It was, you know, they had to come up with Albert and his sister. You know, it was a time when people weren't doing conservation easement sales, you know, a lot. It was kind of a new thing. And I was really struck by this idea of like, remember when you're making a big decision to start with the values that you want to lead with, like what you want the outcome to be. And then that you can figure out the different ways to that. And it could be something quite novel. And that's what the Summers Ranch had to do. They had to figure out, how can we keep this ranch going when Albert and his sister both didn't have heirs? And what the conservation easement allowed is for there to be a sense of like what's going to, how that landscape is going to be conserved. And also it allowed for there to be money to keep the business going. And then they found, you know, the young ranching family to take it over that they're gifting the ranch to. I mean, it's cool.
Yeah.
It's incredible. And also I also liked the idea of sharing that with listeners because I think who might not know anything about agriculture, who might not know anything about what it's like to have, you know, succession plans for family ranching and farms, that it's not, I think so often when we talk about land decisions or, you know, you assume like, how do I extract the most value out of this? And that becomes a decision about how do I sell and who's going to pay the highest dollar? And that was not at all the driving question. For the Summers, it was about how do we maintain the value of this land? And I wanted to share that with people.
Have you gotten any interesting or unique feedback?
Oh, yeah. It's been really fun. It's been fun to hear from people in Wyoming who are like, whoa, I didn't know this about them. And then to hear from people who know nothing about ranching or who know nothing about Wyoming. I have a friend who is an older friend who lives in Berkeley, where I live most of the time. And she was really taken with like the idea of like that you can think about that marriages can look lots of different ways. She really liked the way that Albert and Sue talked about, you know, the real foundation of mutual respect that they have, and also that they each have carved out space to do their own thing inside that marriage. So it's neat to hear how people hear different things and are interested in different things who, you know, have never been to Pinedale.
Well, Anna, thank you for speaking with us.
Thanks for having me, Caitlin.
We've been speaking with Anna Sale, the host of the podcast Death, Sex, and Money. You can listen to the full interview with Albert and Sue Summers wherever you find your podcasts. But stay with us because we're about to hear the first half of that episode.
Most of the people in my family say plethora, but there's one person who insists on saying plethora.
On Away With Words, we fix language problems.
This phrase just stumped me.
The word is nummy.
So he's looking for a paratiresiomaniac with extensive knowledge of osculation.
Every time she says it, we all look at each other.
Look to Away With Words.
Sunday afternoon at 3.
Hello, listeners. This is Megan Feary, the host of the award-winning podcast Human Nature. And if you haven't heard, all 6 episodes of our latest season are available to binge right now. This season has a little bit of everything. Urban birding, a man pushing a peanut up a mountain with his nose, a dog rescue, and even a lobster who became a social media sensation.
Around mid-December, it just started taking off. The views were just piling up quickly. Went from 30,000 views to over 1 million views, and just kept climbing.
You can find Human Nature on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or our website, humannaturepodcast.org. That's Human Nature, one word, one N. And if you have a story to share, let us know. We are always on the lookout for new stories to tell, and we love hearing from you. So, happy trails, and I'll see you next season.
Welcome back to Open Spaces. I'm Camila Kadalska. We just heard Wyoming Public Radio's Caitlin Tan interview the host of the podcast Death, Sex, and Money about her interview with Wyoming Speakers of the House, Albert Sommers, and his wife, Sue. Now we'll hear the first part of Anna Sale's interview with the Sommers.
This is Death, Sex, and Money. The show from WNYC about the things we think about a lot and need to talk about more. I'm Anna Sale. When you drive into Pinedale, Wyoming, the welcome sign says, Pinedale, all the civilization you need. When artist Sue Sommers arrived in town in the early 90s, after growing up in New Jersey, moving around internationally with her dad's job, and going to art school, she was surprised to find Pinedale was all the civilization she needed.
I felt like I could live here, I could live somewhere else, it doesn't really matter. But when happenstance brought me to Pinedale, and I needed to stay for a while, I noticed that I could start contributing to the community and participating in the community, and people would welcome me. Mm-hmm. As long as if I said I was going to bring the brownies and I brought the brownies, I was in.
Yeah.
People like that when you follow through.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started acquiring friends, and I worked at the Pinedale Roundup. And when you work at the local newspaper, you meet everybody. And I had never felt that relevant to a place before.
Sue now lives about 8 miles out of town on a multi-generational cattle ranch. Her husband, Albert, grew up on this land and is now the Republican Speaker of the House in the Wyoming legislature. Late last summer, I visited them at home.
Go say Albert.
And met their dog, Kiki, named for artist Kiki Smith. Their house is a double-wide trailer with this big addition built off the front with floor-to-ceiling windows overlooking wide-open hay fields, the Green River, and mountain peaks on the far horizon. That's Sue's artist studio, what you see when you look to the left from their front door. Look to the right, and you see 2 cozy recliners with hunting trophies hung on the wall, a bull moose and a bighorn sheep ram that Albert got. Just down the hill is the house where a young rancher lives with his wife and kids, who's taken over the Summers' cattle business and will inherit it when they're gone, even though he's no blood relation.
I have no kids, right? We have no kids. You can't take land with you to the grave. I'm just the latest caretaker of this. You know, there's been other caretakers, but I want somebody to take care of it.
I came to talk to Albert and Sue about this, the plans for this place, the family ranch, and this land, and what drew them together at 40 when they got married. When's your wedding date? When is your anniversary?
December 4th, 1999.
And where'd you get married? What was the wedding like?
It was enormous because Albert's family is really well known in the community, and he wanted to have a very community-friendly event. It was like anyone who wants to come, come. And so
literally an ad in the newspaper.
Yeah, oh, is that
come
right?
One, come all.
Yeah, the Boulder invitation Community was Center. In the newspaper.
What's the name of the newspaper where the ad was?
That was in the Pinedale Roundup.
Albert's family has deep roots in this part of Wyoming. Since the late 19th century, his family's been part of what's known as the Green River Drift, a cattle drive about 70 miles long on horseback in the summer to lush green grass that's grown under mountain snowmelt. As the weather cools, the cows make their way back, or drift, to the ranches where they started.
Today, they go home after each day's drive. The next morning, they trailer their horses.
The Green River Drift is on the National Register of Historic Places. 60 Minutes did a piece last year, marking its 125th anniversary.
The old chuck wagon, it's been replaced by a cooler and the tailgate of a pickup truck.
Albert was a bookish kid, and even with asthma and allergies to hay and horses, he was put to work on the ranch.
You start from an early age. I mean, my dad told stories about having to help dig the ditches with a Fresno and driving a team when he was 6 years old.
Wow.
You know, my sister was probably 6 years old when she started haying. The ranch was just your whole life. You know, the table talk was the ranch. The evening, you know, whatever was the ranch. It was just really who we are.
Still, when he finished high school, Albert left to go to college and study electrical engineering. He wasn't sure that running the ranch was something he wanted to do. He left the land, but he also felt like he was a different sort of man than his father.
When my dad walked into the corral in the morning when it was dark, you know, when you catch your horse, and when he yelled, "Whoa," everybody stopped. The chickens stopped. Mom stopped. I stopped. The horses stopped. Uh-huh. But when I was a junior in college, my dad had a horse wreck. A horse died underneath him, and it slapped his head on the ground, and he got a severe head injury. And it changed the family dynamics forever, because he never was the same man. He was still my dad, but it was a right angle turn almost. Hmm.
Did you experience after your dad's injury this sense of you're the son, you're the next generation, you need to come on back? Or was it, did you feel like that was up to you?
I felt to a degree it was up to me, but I felt an incredible pull. Some of it was because my dad was hurt, and a lot of it was the place. You know, my grandfather died in a field, in the cabin field. You know, my dad was born in that ranch house down there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an obligation. I also feel very, I feel very lucky to have had that obligation and this place. It's pretty special.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I'm a crier.
Crying's welcome.
You know, the only cool job that was out there that I thought was really neat was Hewlett-Packard, but there was only one slot and I wasn't the guy, you know, so... So that was that. But I got here and I got back on the ranch and I dug in, and I really don't regret it.
And you were like 21, 22?
21, 22.
What was like a week like? Would you wake up at the same time of day every day? How many hours were you working a day? What were your weekends like?
So, you know, yeah, weekends.
What's a weekend?
Yeah. You know, I remember a year when I maybe took 2 half days off the entire year. I don't mean week, you know, that plus weekends. I mean, that was it.
So I don't think I'd fully have this in my head, Albert. So I'm imagining it's about 20 years of you being a single man, being back on the family ranch, working really hard. What did you notice about Sue that you decided you might want to make some time for her?
You know, I think I was maybe 38, and I woke up one day and I went, you know, there's more to this, you know? And it was a tough headspace for me. And so, you know, I made a conscious effort that I was not going to die alone, if possible, as so many ranchers have.
Oh, that was like you knew what that looked like.
I've seen that. I buried an uncle like that earlier this year, 90 years old, never was married. Yeah, so then I met Sue.
When you noticed Albert noticing you, did you have a sense that he was kind of looking for a serious long-term partnership?
That's such a great question. Because I guess he was kind of stalking me and I didn't even know it. Because he could never work up the guts to talk to me.
I'd sort of see
him off in the periphery, you know? And he finally came up and talked to me at a meeting, a BLM meeting in town. And so I showed up just to see what was going on. And Albert walks up to me, introduces himself. I'm like, yeah, I know who you are. And we just start talking. And pretty soon we're sitting next to each other talking. And we don't care what the other people are saying at the front of the room. And it was, you know, really great chemistry right away.
So like your first date is sitting in chairs at a Bureau of Land Management public comment
most
hearing about energy
most
development.
Most productive meeting I ever had with the federal government in my life.
And I had the long cavewoman hair at the time. You know,
yeah,
guys love that.
And boy, she looked pretty good.
And it was tricky because all of Albert's neighbors and buddies were like sitting in rows in front of us and behind us. And they could see we were sitting next to each other like bzz, 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 talking. Were you going to finish this story or should I?
You do. I always finish this story.
Well, I thought, you know, he hasn't really asked me out or anything, but we really need to keep talking.
Hmm.
How am I going to do that without like all of these very rough and tumble cowboys seeing it?
Uh-huh.
You know, and then giving him a hard time.
Oh, uh-huh.
Or making me feel weird. And so I waited till the last meeting was over and we were all kind of filing out. And I just made sure I kind of stayed kind of close behind him. And we got outside the library and it was starting to get dark. And I kind of looked around. I didn't see any of those guys, you know. And I said, would you like to continue our conversation?
Albert's eyes filled up with tears again.
And yeah, it was like high beams, you know, in his eyes. It was great.
Were you like trying to think of what to say also? And then but didn't quite have the words?
Yeah, I'm always really shy around women. So I couldn't think of anything.
Did it feel like an answered prayer when she said, do you want to continue this conversation?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, people probably don't think of me as a religious man around here because I don't go to church. But I prayed at night, and one of the things I prayed for was to meet somebody to share my life with.
That was Albert and Sue Summers speaking with Anna Sale on her podcast, Death, Sex, and Money. In the next half of the episode, the Summers talk about their choice to not have kids, getting older, and what that all means for their ranch. Listen to the rest wherever you find podcasts. That's it for Open Spaces. Thanks for listening. The entire show and all the stories you heard can be found on our website at wyomingpublicmedia.org. The show can also be found wherever you get your podcasts, and we post all our stories on the station's social media platforms. Thanks to Hannah Haberman, our producer, and Eric Vihill, our digital producer and social media manager, for today's show. Open Spaces is a production of Wyoming Public Radio News.